Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler. I am running solo today, hosting our Mighty Parenting podcast to bring you information and resources to support you in your parenting journey. Today, we are talking about something that to me feels a little bit different, and that's because it's something that is not often discussed in many communities. I've never heard it discussed in parenting circles until I started bringing it up to people, but it's actually a huge problem and one that affects teens and young adults and even younger kids and older adults in all 50 states, and that is human trafficking. Now, personally, I had huge misconceptions about this, and I was definitely a parent who never thought about it in terms of my own kids, my family. I didn't think of it as something that could possibly really touch me or my community. But when my youngest daughter was in high school, she came home one day and told me about a presentation they had that educated the kids about trafficking, and it shocked me. I found out that this isn't something that just affects third world countries or people who are trying to escape their countries, coming here illegally, and that type of thing, which is what many people think. I found out that it could happen to my girls or their friends or anyone, really. So it became very important to me to share this information with you. Like so many other things that we discuss here at Mighty Parenting, the more we talk, the more open and honest we are about these subjects, the better informed we are, the better off we'll all be. So today I have Kathy Knopf joining us. Kathy founded the Southwest Michigan Human Trafficking Task Force back in 2012, and her purpose there was to educate and to bring awareness to the communities of Southwest Michigan about human trafficking and to develop a plan for a victim-centered approach that has law enforcement, NGOs, faith-based organizations, and concerned citizens all collaborating. Her work has had great impact, and one of the things that she says is that a trafficker's worst nightmare is a well-informed community. So today, she is joining us to bring this awareness to parents across the U.S. and around the world and make us all a well-informed community. So Kathy, thank you so much for joining the Mighty Parenting community today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for allowing me to help spread some awareness and also to clear up some misconceptions about what human trafficking is and isn't. So thank you, Sandy.
There are, right? There are so many misconceptions. I certainly had absolutely no idea what it was until my daughter came home and started educating me. So let's start there. Let's start with what are some of the most harmful misconceptions people believe? Like the things that allow trafficking to persist more or make us more vulnerable? You know, what are some of those big misconceptions?
You know, and I think truly the biggest one that I hear over and over and over again is that, well, it doesn't happen here. You know, it happens in third world countries. Or prostitution is a choice, you know, that a woman or a young man is making, and that's just not usually the case. It happens everywhere. It happens in every city, in every state, in every county, in every community, and people are not aware of that. They're also not aware that there are two types of trafficking. There's both if they have any idea of what trafficking is, they understand that there is sex trafficking. It's commercial sex trafficking is what we're really referring to. And then there's also forced labor. That is the other part of it. I'm going to go and segue into something different right here for a second, in that we just recently had some students working with us on a senior project on human trafficking, and they were going to present to middle school students. And herein lies part of the problem. They had the approval to do the presentation, and we gave them all the correct information. And just before they gave their presentation, like a day or two before, they were asked not to use the terminology sex trafficking. And I was like, what? I mean, that would be like presenting something on drugs and not saying heroin or cocaine.
Right.
And it's like human trafficking is the umbrella term, but there are the specific terms of sex trafficking and labor trafficking, and there are very specific differences. And so for people to deny what those differences are and to not let people talk about it and become aware of it, it just perpetuates, again, the myths and what is accurate and not accurate. And so I was very disheartened that I was so pleased that they were going to be able to go into a middle school and talk to students. And then it was like, well, not really. You're not really being able to give the truth at that point. So it is happening. It's happening everywhere. And, you know, we need to let our children and our students understand how it's happening so that they don't become vulnerable to predators. And that's part of it. But just to give you a couple ideas, and then I'll go back over what the definition is of human trafficking, too, because that's important. And to let people understand how we, as everyday consumers, take part in adding to that trafficking situation, because we all do, unbeknownst to most people. But some of the myths are that it's always or usually a violent crime. The reality of that is that it's not. It's often, you know, people think that it involves kidnapping or physically forcing someone into a car or something like that. It's more often a psychological crime, in that a predator or a trafficker is, they groom their victims over time. And this goes into the next part of the myth, is that it's usually a stranger. You know, we've taught our children at least in my generation, we taught our children so much stranger danger. You know, well, I just on our Facebook page today posted about that there was a mayor from a city in Illinois who is being sentenced for trafficking, basically. And then there was also a law enforcement person who was in a youth club, and he was sexually abusing the children and the boys. So, you know, they had been around these people, and they had had the trust of these young kids. And again, it's not just girls, it's boys that they're predators on. And so, you know, it can be the doctor, it can be the lawyer, it can be the neighbor, it can be the parent or the grandma. It can be anybody that you think, the babysitter that you think is a trusting person. And oftentimes they use that to their advantage because they're around the household or around the parents. I'll just use a sports coach. You know, they're around the parents, and they can even in front of the parents pat the child or the teen on the back or spank them on the butt and say, you know, good job today, you know. And so the parent sees that, and the child sees that in front of the parent, and it's accepted. And that's just part of how the grooming gets started. The child says, oh, this is okay for them to touch me or hug me or pat me on the shoulder or the butt in a way in front of my parents, and this is okay. And that starts that whole grooming process.
And Kathy, I want to take this apart a little bit, because there are a couple of other pieces in here that I think are easy for a parent to miss or come into this misconception piece of it. And I think another one of the misconceptions, actually is what you already said, right? That it's usually a stranger and it's a violent crime, that people get taken away. And that was one of the things that really surprised me. It was this idea that, no, that a child can be living in their own home,
absolutely,
and the parents have no idea that they're actually being trafficked. So can you
absolutely
explain to us how that works? Because that's just so, it's so hard to imagine as a parent.
Right. And so, you know, we often reference the Teresa Flores situation, and she was a 15-year-old in Bloomfield Hills area in Michigan, and a young man had been grooming her, telling her every day. She was a young Christian athlete and was a virgin and her parents didn't allow her to date, and she had just moved to a community, so she didn't have that support system where the teachers knew her or her background or what was, you know, what was her normal routine and everything, and she didn't have any aunts or grandparents around to watch her back, and her parents were busy trying to make their social circle, you know, get to know everybody in the community, and so some things slipped through, but she came from a really good family, and this young boy was grooming her by, he was a couple of years older, by saying, you know, Teresa, you have such pretty hair, you smell so good, I like that dress, blah, 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 and one day after school, he asked her if she would like a ride home after her sports practice, and she thought, well, a ride home is not, you know, that's not a date, so that's acceptable, okay, and he went the opposite direction of her home, and she said, I live the other way, and he said, I'm going to swing by my house, and he had a even nicer home than hers, and she had a nice home, so she thought, well, that won't hurt, and then he said, why don't you come in for a second, and she said, no, I don't think so, but then he said those three little words, I like you, and she, that was very heady stuff to a 15-year-old, and so she went in for a second, he gave her a pop, it was laced with drugs. He raped her. His cousins took pictures of it. And then he said, when she came to, if you don't do what I say, I will destroy your life. It'll never be the same, which it never was, by showing the pictures to your dad's boss. And her dad was quite high up in, I think, an auto industry you know, business, and I'll show it to your priest, I'll show it to your mom, I'll show it to your friends, I'll show it to your little brother, and, you know, she just couldn't have that. As a 15-year-old, if you can put yourself in a 15-year-old's place, you know, you even worry about, you know, like if you have a pimple on your face. So, you know, can you imagine what you think if somebody would see that you were having sex with a, you know, really basically a stranger? And she, in her naive mind, thought that he wanted her to wash his car, take her, his dog for a walk, do his homework. So she thought, I will do what he asks, and I will get these pictures back. Well, no, what he asked was that she leave her house in the middle of the night. He picked her up at the corner, took her to these strange homes, and she had to have sex with strange men, many men, over the night, and sometimes it was brutal. And this went on for 2 years. They would take her home in the wee hours of the morning. She would take her shower or bath. And in the morning, being very tired, she would have breakfast with her family. They never knew. And one night she didn't answer her phone and they couldn't find her dog. And she found it was dead in her mailbox, which was their sign. Don't fool with us. We're serious.
Oh, so when she didn't answer her phone, the traffickers...
Yes.
Attacked her dog. Yes. Okay.
Yes. And so she felt she had to continue to do this. Psychologically, she thought, I have to keep doing this because I'm protecting my family, because they will kill my family. She wasn't thinking they would kill her. She thought she was protecting her family. So she did this for 2 years till her dad was, he was actually, his job, he was promoted and they moved to another state. And that's how she actually got out of it, because she physically moved from the area. Now, her trafficker is still loose because he's free, because she never pressed charges back then. She didn't even understand, which is typical, that she was a victim of human trafficking. She eventually graduated, went on to college, and in a college course, she heard her professor talking about the symptoms of human trafficking, and the light bulb went on, and she was like, oh my gosh, I was a victim of human trafficking. And not until that day did she understand that. She has gone on to do great things in the field, has helped change a law in Michigan so that you can go back years later after your trafficker. It's called the Teresa Flores Law, and she has started an organization called SOAP, S-O-A-P, which stands for Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution, I believe is what it stands for. And she goes all around the country, and they're going to make a Netflix movie about her life. But she is a great survivor, is wonderful, and has done so much for the awareness of how you can be trafficked out of your own home, which people didn't understand. And she's written a couple of books.
So what are the book titles?
It's called The Slave Across the Street. And it's the true story of how an American teen survived the world of human trafficking. And then she's got another one that's for the classroom teacher. And I don't have that title right here at my fingertips, but it's like a one-day read. It's so fascinating. But that's just one way how You can be trafficked from your own home. The other is, of course, when a parent or a grandparent or a brother or a relative is trafficking the child or the grandchild or the sister or the brother because of economic reasons or for drugs out of their own home. People get smuggling and trafficking confused. Smuggling, there does have to take movement. It does take movement, and it's movement from a border. So from a foreign border to America or vice versa. And trafficking, there doesn't have to take any movement, and it doesn't have to, there's no international borders that you cross necessarily. There can be, but it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be. Where smuggling, there does have to be. Smuggling is a crime against a nation, and human trafficking is a crime against a person.
Okay. Okay, so in her story, you actually showed us a little bit about how people are recruited. And again, that there's another piece there of, I think that many people tend to think of a human trafficker as an older adult, probably typically an older adult male. Whereas, no, this is a high school boy mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. just started hanging out with her and then gives her what she needs, acceptance and understanding, and then playing mm-hmm. off of fears. What are there other ways that people, children, and I also wanted to say this, I thought of this earlier, we're talking primarily to parents of teens and young adults here. However, mm-hmm. I have heard of children being trafficked all the way down to age 9. Is that
correct? Age 1 is the youngest I know.
Wow. Okay.
I know of an age one, and that was trafficked by her father.
Okay. So again, mm-hmm. just that awareness piece. But how are kids and young adults, how are they recruited by a trafficker?
Okay. And save that thought because I want to finish up on Teresa because there are definite warning signs that the teachers, her priest, her parents, her brother, you know, everybody missed, and that's what I want to make sure that people aren't missing. So for her, her weight changed drastically. Her grades changed drastically. She dropped out of her sports. The parents did notice physical scars and scrapes and bruises, and she always had a lie for them. You know, oh, I tripped. Oh, I the dog scratched me. Oh, this or that. I ran into the doorknob. You know, you can believe that once or twice, but when it's for 2 years, so many times, which is not usual for that child or teen, you need to start questioning it when there's so many different things. When she started looking tired and she started not hanging out with all of her friends. Her friends didn't want to hang out with her anymore. She didn't have a large circle of friends because she just moved there. But she had a few, and they no longer wanted to hang out with her. They knew the kind of guys that she was hanging out with, who she called her boyfriend. So there were some definite changes in her personality and all these other traits, and people miss them.
Yeah, and that's something that we talk about that actually, there's a lot of overlap for other mental or behavioral health issues as well. And so this is a reminder for us as parents, when we see changes in our kids, that's a red flag to say, hey, I need to figure out what's going on. Yes, teenagers change. There are normal teenage changes. But when you start seeing things like their appearance changing dramatically, the weight loss, the changes in grades and activities and sports, their physical environment, you know, if they were always a neatnik, now they're a slob, vice versa.
Right.
Those physical changes in them, there's always a time to really get curious and figure out what is going on in your kid's life and not to just slough it off. Cause it could be, surprisingly, it could be trafficking. It could be that they're dealing with depression or suicide ideation. It could be drugs or alcohol. It could be a lot of different things that were going on, mm-hmm. none of which we want our kids to be experiencing. So,
right. And so there are other ways that, that the government has also identified, there's a fact sheet for schools, which then I would also say parents, that they can find online. It's from the U.S. Department of Education, Office of Safe and Healthy Students, it would be www.ed.gov. And it has, you know, the definition of human trafficking, the extent that it's in the United States, and then it gives examples of child trafficking cases that include the commercial sex, stripping, pornography, forced begging, magazine crews, when you see those children or teens in the summer coming around to your house saying, you know, they're selling magazines or they're selling whatever it is they're selling, books, magazines, some type of utensil, whatever it is, au pairs or nannies, restaurant work, hair and nail salons, agricultural work, drug sales, and cultivation. Those are ways that they have identified child trafficking cases in America. And so it's a handy little sheet that they can pick up, and it has a lot of information, additional signs of a trafficker or a pimp or a predator will often try to act as a boyfriend or a girlfriend. They're often older. You know, the child or the teen may change their demeanor of their clothing. They also may no longer have their identity with them, their ID, or if they had a passport or a green card, those are sometimes taken away. They may show up with an additional cell phone. We used to say pagers. I don't know anybody really that has a pager anymore. But if they have a cell phone that the parent didn't buy them, you know, you need to ask those questions. And I often say to parents, they're afraid to check the children's emails or phone contacts or their friends. And I'm like, you're paying for these things usually. You know, don't be afraid to check it. It's a lot easier to check what sites they're on or who their friends are than it is to report them missing. You know, that's heartbreaking to see a parent have to go through that. And
well,
so
and
that
again,
brings me to the next part.
If you're seeing these red flags,
yes,
that would be a reasonable step to take. Is, I know parents are all different opinions, and I'm not going to sit here and tell a parent exactly where they should, you know, place their rules about privacy and things. But when you see warning signs, when you
yes.
see red flags, that there's a good chance there is something wrong in your child's life, that is a good time to say, hey, this is about safety. And mm-hmm. as a parent, that has to trump privacy.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, another myth is that it's only women and girls, but victims are often boys or men. And that it's not just commercial sex. It's also, you know, labor intensive too. But I wanted to go back over to one part, which is that a lot of times how children enter into being groomed in the beginning is that it's through social media and games. And so, you know, that's a very big concern. I would say most parents have never taken their children or their child to an R-rated movie, nor would the theater let you bring them in. But yet every single day, these kids are on games that are R-rated or social media sites that are R-rated. And, you know, parents are unaware that that's really the case of what the games are like. I'm trying to pull up the site here that shows the tabs are for the games. I think it's Netflix is geared towards you have to be 4 years old to get into a Netflix account. But truly, it's 17 that it's really rated for because of the violence, the language, and the sex, you know, the content in it. For Snapchat, it says you have to be 12, but it says infrequent, mild sexual content for it. But in reality, There's sextortion, there's pornography, there's prostitution, there's sex trafficking, there's porn, there's risky sexual behaviors, there's drugs, there's alcohol. And so the actual recommended age is 17. For Instagram, again, it says you have to be 12, but in reality, it's 17. Again, there's sex trafficking and prostitution on there. There's self-harm. There's cyberbullying. There's pornography and nudity. There's animal abuse. So many things that parents don't understand. They can go to an app called Fix, F-I-X, app, A-P-P, ratings.com to see what the reality is for all the social apps.
And when it comes to something like someone, if a child wants to join a social media app, even if it says you have to be 12, there's no proof behind that. And we don't have the time to dig into the entire social media piece right now. I mean, we want to touch on some of these that are specific to human trafficking, but I just want to also remind Mighty Parents that episode 70 was an interview with Mandy Majors all about teaching our kids how to live in a world with social media and more than just which apps we should and shouldn't let them use, but actually how to teach them the skills they need. So go listen to that to get some additional skills around this, but be aware also, you know, we talked about this idea of, you know, if you're going to check your children's phone, there are some apps that if you just see that they're on your kid's phone, it's a big red warning flag. One was Absolutely. The calculator that really,
yeah, the secret calculator. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's this secret calculator, and when I went to your presentation here, you said it lets the kids hide photos and videos and documents behind an actual working calculator.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. as a parent, how do we know that this is a secret calculator and not a calculator?
And that's just something, you know, if they have two calculators on their phone, I guess that would be the warning. That I would say, why do you have two calculators? You know, can you explain it? And I would ask, you know, I would ask your child if they act nervous or fumbling about that answer, then I would say, you know, explain to me, why don't we delete one?
Okay,
you know,
you
don't need two calculators and or just try and use it. Because if you go to push the secret calculator, you can't, my understanding is you can't usually get into it unless you have the right code.
Oh, okay.
So if you're, all right. trying to use it, I don't think that it works necessarily as a calculator, but it might, you know, things change every day. So what didn't work yesterday might work today and vice versa.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why we try not to get too focused on specific apps, but about the whole social media conversation in general. But at the time that we're having this conversation, some of the apps that should at least start a conversation with you and your kid would be Kick, K-I-K, Wicker, yes. W-I-C-K-R. Yes. And if you yes. have a young person in your life who is on Tinder, you know,
oh my gosh.
Again, most of us who got married a long time ago, you know, we didn't date through apps. Well, Tinder right. is one that is essentially designed for hooking up, not building long-term
exactly.
relationships. And again, teenagers, that really isn't the way that we probably want them dating. So there is right. those are a few things to specifically watch out for, but let's move off the app piece of it and back to our conversation. So you said that one of the myths is this happens primarily to women and girls. I'd like to talk a little bit more about how our boys are affected by this, what happens to them, how they get groomed to be trafficked. And, you know, if there are some different warning signs that we might see, like you mentioned this idea of forced labor, going door to door selling magazines. So if my child is gone all day every summer and I, you know, you get that sense of I'm not able to get in touch with them the way that I should be and things just don't seem right. The idea that they are never, ever home, that would be a red flag for
right.
that type of trafficking. So let's talk a little bit more about our boys and what happens to them, as well as obviously they are sex trafficked as well. So the other warning signs that we talked about would still apply to them.
So around the middle of May, I posted on our Facebook that NBA, former NBA star Kevin Dooley was raped at age 7, basically, and he was sexually assaulted then for a while, and he repressed that and didn't recall it for a long time. And then as an adult, after he was an NBA star, it came out one day because somebody just like grabbed his butt. And all those memories, it was kind of like a PTSD that it came flooding back to him. And he had to deal with this then. And the way that that whole scenario took place with him was that it was a, a little bit older teenager, like a 15-year-old, who introduced him to porn. And porn has often been the lead-in to sex trafficking of younger boys. There's another video that shows a 12-year-old recovering addict of porn. And they stumble on it innocently so often. They can be looking up something, and it can be whether it's a game or if it's research or whatever, and they type in one letter different and a sexual site comes up. And it's like they don't want to look at it. Really, most boys don't, but it's like looking at an accident. You don't want to look at it, but you can't turn your eyes away. And then once they've seen it, they want to see more and more. And that sometimes is how they get pulled into it. And predators often can tell what sites somebody is on. And then they make that connection. And then they start having a chat with them in chat rooms or on, even as supposedly, and I'm doing air quotes here, their friend. And then they eventually meet. And so sometimes that it's again, the grooming process of how they meet. Although the vulnerable populations are trafficked at a higher incidence. And so those vulnerable populations are your runaway kids, your foster kids, your homeless kids, somebody who might have a disability or impairment, you know, your LGBTQ kids. Those kids are often trafficked at a higher rate. And one of the examples I explained is that, and again, they're not always understanding that they're a victim. If you are a child who has come from a home where there's a lot of just a lot of stress and disruption, and the parents may not be there, or there's drugs or some kind of thing going on in the home, and let's say there's eight other children, and you get the hand-me-down sneakers of seven other kids, and you're the eighth one to get these sneakers, and somebody comes through and says, dude, I can get you a brand new pair of Nikes for the first time in your life, and all you have to do is have sex with somebody, sometimes to a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old, that doesn't sound like a bad deal. And I'm not supporting that. I'm just telling you that that is what we've heard, that that is how in a 14 or a 12-year-old's mind, to be able to have their first pair of brand new sneakers in their whole life after having hand-me-downs for their whole life, just for having a 30-minute sex romp with somebody, it's not a bad trade-off to them. And this is where we have to help them understand, this is your whole life. You're trading in your whole life. You know, you're getting caught up in this, and then it's going to lead into drugs, or it's going to lead into organized gangs and different things. And they don't understand this one moment in time is changing their whole life. And if a child or a person isn't taken out of and rescued out of trafficking, the statistics have shown that the average lifespan is only 7 years from the time they're first start into a trafficking lifestyle or in the life, because of whether it's drug related or dying at the hands of the pimp or the John or suicide or STDs or whatever it is, their 7-year lifespan is the average.
That's sobering. That's definitely sobering. So it's still meeting sort of those emotional needs that kids have. So one of the things that we can do to help protect our kids is to teach them emotional wellness skills, emotional wellness strategies. If we have, you know, if our home has problems and stress and, you know, all families are dysfunctional to some degree. I mean, that's just the way life is. But, you know, if there's serious dysfunction, work at getting our kids extra help, extra support that they need. One of the things that we need to do as well is talk to our kids. So what are some of the conversations we should be having with our teens or our 20-somethings?
Well, we should be able to be honest and not hide what the words are. Again, you know, it's not just human trafficking, it's sex trafficking and labor trafficking. It's the second largest criminal activity in the world, and that includes the U.S., and it's, you know, when I tell people the second largest, and yet most people don't even understand it's a crime here. It's like, this is huge. We have got to get this information out and explain how people need to prevent themselves from getting caught up into it, because it can occur so easily. You know, and that middle age group of teens to young adults is the age group that is most vulnerable to get caught up in it. And we need to let them know there are resources out there. There are places they can go. And we also need to stop the demand. I mean, who is taking advantage of all these vulnerable kids and people, and who's buying the sex for the commercial sex part? Well, we know what that population looks like, and we need to make them aware that this is not just buying sex, this is rape, and it needs to stop. And if we stop the demand, we will stop this, you know, then that there will be no need for supply. And the supply is getting younger and younger, the demand for younger and younger children. And it's just disheartening, you know, to hear that. The part I want to also make sure that we talked about the labor trafficking for a minute, that people don't always understand that we all are consumers of so many goods, and we all touch labor trafficking, because you can't get away from it. You know, you can buy trade-free coffee, but, you know, you can't buy trade-free everything. You know, it's chocolate, it's pineapple, it's shrimp, it's gold, it's stone, it's silver. It's just, you know, so many things. Your telephone, your computer, your car part, you know, parts of your car. There are so many things that have been touched by labor trafficked modern day slavery, you know, that we can't actually get away from it. What we can do is we can, if we have a voice to the supply chain, we can ask them to look at where the supplies come from and make sure that they're not being touched by modern day slavery. Or we can also become better consumers and say, I'm not going to buy something unless I really need it. I'm going to reuse it. I'm going to go to resale shops. You know, we can do those types of things and stand up for it a little bit more and try not to add into the forced labor market as much. There is a site that you can go to called slaveryfootprint.org, and you can take the little quiz to find out how many slaves you actually have on your back from the type of lifestyle you lead.
Interesting. Okay, so and those are also conversations to have with our kids, right? Is how can
we
impact this? How can we be better consumers of that? I want to go back to the conversation piece a minute. Are there habits or behaviors that can put our kids more at risk? Should we be educating them, you know, safety factors? How can we educate them to be safer?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, again, there's so many things online. That's really the scariest place for a child or a teen at this point, is that if somebody asks to be your friend and you don't know them, I would not be their friend. They can say that they're, you know, if your teen is 14 and the person wants to be your friend and they say they're 15 or they're 16, you don't know that to be true. It could be a 32-year-old person who is disguising themselves as a 15 or 16 year old. And if you're having the predators are very astute at understanding what the need is of the child or the teen. You know, they need love, they need acceptance, they need comforting, they, you know, whatever it is. And that's what that predator is going to be giving them online. Like, oh, I missed you. What took you so long to get back? Or how was your day? Or, you know, I'm sorry your mom yelled at you. Or it sucks that your dad's making you mow the yard. Or, you know, whatever it is, they're going to be the one so understanding and so caring and so loving. And, gee, I'd really like to meet you. Or, you know, I've been wanting to take you and buy you an ice cream or necklace. Or, you know, they're just, and again, if you can remember back when you were 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, the chances that you had somebody who was just paying attention to you and wanting to buy you things and give you compliments, you know, that just wasn't the norm back then. And so again, it's really heady stuff still.
Yeah.
And it sucks kids in every single day. And I mean, it's like something like every minute. I mean, the statistics are extremely high. And then they're sucked in too fast before they even realize it. And then there is sometimes when they meet that sometimes there will be travel and they will take them away. I mean, we do hear those stories too, but not always.
Mm-hmm. Another conversation, which actually had come to mind at the beginning of this, when you were telling Teresa's story, another conversation to have with our kids is, you know, if something happens to you or you do something that you are worried about us being angry or you're ashamed of, and maybe share Teresa's story and say, you know, if she was our daughter, she could have come to us with that and we would not be angry at her. She was a victim. Even if she'd made a bad choice in there somewhere, we're going to get you out. We're going to get you help. Our first concern is your welfare, your safety, your peace, not whether you broke a rule or not. So I think that's an important conversation to have with our kids. And then in one of your presentations, this one actually goes beyond just, you know, there's the trafficking piece of this, but also just keeping our kids from doing things that can create big problems in their life in various ways. And at the presentation, you said that sending nude pictures over the internet is a federal crime. How many teenagers in this day and age, they're doing that? And how many do you think actually know that what they're doing is a federal crime? So I
Not
think
hardly any
conversation,
of them.
Right. And then, of course, from the trafficking standpoint is if somebody's asking for these things of you, do you really believe they have your best interest at heart? And even if it's a boyfriend or a girlfriend or somebody you are close to right now, arguments happen, breakups happen. Do you really want that person to have these pictures of you later? So those are a couple of additional conversations I thought of. Also building on what we teach here at Mighty Parenting, or, you know, different ways of building a strong relationship with our child. Because the stronger relationship we have, I think the better chance we have of them letting us know if something makes them uncomfortable. They still may not. We need to watch for those red flags and the warning signs. But I do think that helps. I had one other question for you, though, Kathy, is if our kids suspect, you know, that someone's being trafficked. You talked about especially these vulnerable populations, runaways, foster kids, homeless, those who have a disability or are different. The LGBTQ community, I think it was something like 40% in that community of the kids who are affected. Mm-hmm. If our kids suspect that someone's being affected, or if we suspect our child is being trafficked, what do we do?
So, if you suspect your child, if I suspected my child was, or you suspect your child was being trafficked, I think I would immediately grab them and talk to them. I have a mom that I know figured out that her daughter was being trafficked for drugs. She had gotten into drugs, and in order to get the drugs, and that's, again, another way that kids get involved is, and they can't afford the drugs, so then they traffic out their bodies for the drugs. And so she took her daughter in the middle of the night to another state, to a safe home, and, you know, just got her removed from the situation and clean. there, you know, but I would immediately take my child and have that conversation and say, I need to see your social media. I need to see your emails. I need to see, that's what I would do. You know, you can't tell a parent again what to do, but you want to keep them safe and say, what is going on? I see a branding, which would be like a tattoo. I see that you have a cell phone. I see that you've been hanging out with older people. You know, I can't locate you at certain times. There are all these warning flags. I need to understand them and what's going on. But there are other resources and places you can call. There's the National Human Trafficking Hotline number, which I will give you. And then, you know, you can always call depending on what city or state you're in. There's a lot of human trafficking task force or organizations or coalitions, and a lot of the YWCAs also have stepped up and are helping out quite a bit with the domestic abuse or trafficking and shelters. And so those are all great places to start, and of course police departments. Law enforcement has been getting quite a bit of training on human trafficking in the last, I would say, 3 years. 6 years ago, we were one of the first ones doing the training for law enforcement, but in the last three or so, I think, especially Michigan State Police has been doing a lot of training on it.
Okay, and so, what if they suspect a child at school or a friend of theirs or just somebody they know of is being
trafficked? I think that depending on the relationship they have with their parent, to tell the parent or the trusted adult, whether it's, religious-based person or their counselor or their principal or their coach, whoever they trust with that information, I would definitely take it to an adult, or at least the least I would do is call the hotline number, which the number is 1-888-373-7888. And Michigan had the sixth largest number of calls last year coming into the hotline, which I say is a great thing. That means when we see something, we say something. We have been great at calling the hotline. I would hate to be the state that calls the least amount of times. I would like to see us call even more because we're not putting up with it. We're seeing it and we're saying something about it.
And I appreciate that, Kathy. I know that it's your organization that brought this to my attention first through my daughter, and I've been to a couple of presentations you've done in our community since, and you've gotten through, you know, one through a church, one through the schools. And so I love your premise that a trafficker's worst nightmare is a well-informed community. So I do invite all of our parents to have these conversations with other parents. This is something we can do. Have the conversations with our kids. My daughter was also blown away. She didn't know anything about this either. So we had really good conversations. And now 6-ish years later, we still go back to those conversations, and that opened a door for us to also look at things like, you know, hey, mom, I was at a gas station and this couple with a baby, you know, it's nighttime. She's in the Metro Detroit area doing an internship. She's like, this couple with a baby is asking me for a ride somewhere. She's like, how do you deal with this? You know, so we can talk about that and come up with ideas. And we kind of came up with a blanket thing of saying, in any situation, people are asking you for money and rides and things like that. You just say, I'm sorry, I can't do that right now, but I have a phone. Mm-hmm. I can call the police for you and they will know, you know, we can call the local police station. They'll know how to get you some resources. And right. It was just, it made me feel good that she still comes to me. And I did the same thing with her. I've been in a situation where it's like, hey, you know, I saw this and I'm just trying to think, how do I deal with this? What do I do with it? And then it opens that door in that conversation, which keeps our kids aware for themselves and their own safety. So Kathy, would you also share your task force's website? Because I know you have a lot of information and links to different things on there that parents may want to connect with.
Yes, absolutely. We have warning signs on there. We have resources on there. It's southwestmichiganhumantrafficking.org. We also have a Facebook, Southwest Michigan Human Trafficking. And, you know, we have upcoming events. We like to say the fight can be fun. We go where the people are. We don't necessarily just have, you know, event where they can come to us. We like to go where the people are and where there's fun so that we can bring the awareness where people are at. Because they don't always want to just come to an awareness of it. So we think the fight can be fun. And keep your kids safe this summer. Make sure you know where they're at and that they know the signs. You know, if anybody's not sure, they can call us and we'll be happy to go over that information again with them. One other thing I just wanted to let you know that on our website, we just finished a resource book for survivors of human trafficking, and it lists shelters, legal, medical, all kinds of information, and that's all free and it's on our website, so that's available, and also where people can get more information for trainings. So you know, I would encourage people to look that up.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And thanks for joining us today, Mighty Parents, and being part of our community. Don't forget to pop over to mightyparenting.com and see everything else that we have to support you. And remember, if you're here, if you're listening, if you're trying, you are a mighty parent. And we'll see you next week.